You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
We like to fix things. If something breaks in our house, we feel good about it when we can fix it, whether it's a leaky faucet or a screaming kid. We're proud of what we can fix. My father-in-law used to spend his Saturdays tinkering around the house, repairing and fixing everything that needed to be fixed, whether it was leaky plumbing or a squeaky hinge or something that needed new paint. He had a T-shirt that he proudly wore every Saturday, and it got more threadbare as the years went by, that proudly boasted across the front, "I can fix anything." It was his Saturday T-shirt. I thought it was really cool. And so in that same spirit, one Christmas, I got my mother-in-law a similar shirt that said, "I can fix anyone." For some reason, I can't figure out she never wore it. In the church, we have often confused mission with fixing things, whether the problem is lack of food or lack of faith. We send volunteer admission teams into every corner of the world, they're matching T-shirts, proclaiming that the world would be in much better shape if people just did things our way. There can be tremendous arrogance here, which not surprisingly means that mission, instead of fixing things, can make things worse, can increase the brokenness of the world. Such arrogant mission means that we regularly misunderstand the gospel, misunderstand the world, distort the gospel, and can often be counted on to provide ideological justification for repression, conquest, exploitation, even genocide. The scripture passage that we heard this morning helps us to rethink mission, and it starts with the demand that we stay awake. Here's Jesus between the Last Supper and the crucifixion, wrestling with who he is. And frankly, he would prefer that there was a plan B that would let him off the hook. So he goes with Peter and James and John to the Garden of Gethsemane, and he asks them to stay awake with him, and he goes and prays, "Please, God, is there some other way we can do this?" And he, in despair, comes back to look for them and finds them asleep, chastises them, says, "Please, stay awake with me." Goes back to pray again, comes back, finds them sleeping again. "Please, can you stay awake with me, you guys? Come on." Goes back to pray one more time and comes back to find them, as it says, with their eyes heavy. They're asleep again. He asks them repeatedly to just stay awake with him. I think it's important to notice what does not happen in this story. Jesus does not ask them to solve his problem. He does not ask them to pick up swords to defend him against the soldiers who are coming. He does not ask them to make a phone call to their friends in the government to get him off the hook. He does not ask them to sneak out the back gate with him. And nor does he tell them that it's useless, that there's nothing that they could do, that they should just go home. Whatever happens is going to happen. Instead, he says there is something that they can do. They can stay awake, and they can wait with him. As the late Father Daniel Berrigan once said, "Don't just do something, stand there." If you've ever had a loved one or a friend die from an illness, you may know what he meant. You can't do anything to change the diagnosis. The best thing you can do is simply remain at their bedside quietly, peacefully, so that they know you're there. Some call this being present or having a ministry of presence. What's important to being present is that we shut our mouths and we listen. The person or persons that we accompany get to set the agenda. Now, there's a lesson here for close relationships, and I've had to learn in my own marriage to resist the urge to solve my wife's problems for her. She's got to solve them on her own, as long as the solution doesn't involve kicking me out of the house. And so As a result, I have learned to say, I understand, even if I don't. But I keep listening and nodding appropriately every once in a while. And as long as I don't say, what you need to do is, then we get along just fine. At least till this morning. She's in the loft, by the way, so no one please tell her what I just said. For many years in Latin America, rather than talk about mission the way we've traditionally talked about it, as a paternalistic effort to save other people from sin and poverty, Latin Americans have suggested that we talk about mission as accompaniment. That rather than rushing to fix other people's problems for them with what we think is best, we practice the art of listening, of being present, of simply staying awake. And the more that we can stay awake and listen, the more likely we are not to violate the first rule of both Hippocrates and John Wesley, do no harm. This is particularly difficult, however, for some of us who've grown up in an environment that encourages activism. But doing no harm means preceding activism with active listening. Healthcare providers in our day and age are under increasing pressure to see more people in less time, but that can contribute to bad medicine. Studies of doctors have indicated that when they come in and they ask the patient what's going on, why are they there, that doctors will listen to somewhere between 12 to 18 seconds before they interrupt or redirect the conversation. That, studies indicate, leads to lower patient satisfaction and poor health outcomes. One study says that over 70% of adverse health outcomes in hospitals is caused by communication failure. Paul Newman, you saw the movie. What we have here is a failure to communicate, rather than by the provider's lack of technical skill. So all the research is telling doctors that if they want to heal their patients, they need to first listen to them. So the same lesson applies to us as people of faith. But who do we listen to? A few verses earlier in his gospel, Matthew records Jesus telling us that if we want to meet him in our time, that we will find him in those who are hungry or thirsty or naked or in prison. And this is critical to understanding today's passage. We are challenged to stay awake with Jesus as he, in our time, approaches us in those at the edges of our communities. Staying awake with Jesus can also mean being willing to be at the edge where the poor live. I was recently in El Salvador working on a story about gangs and the church's ministry in gang communities. And I told a taxi driver that I wanted to go to a particular neighborhood, and he refused to take me. He said it wasn't safe. I offered him more money, and he still refused to take me. Finally, I called up the priest in that neighborhood who I had an appointment with, and I had him talk to the taxi driver. And he carefully explained which streets to use, and if we encountered any problems, to explain that he was on the way to the church, which is seen as neutral territory in the gang wars that have enveloped San Salvador. It has earned that trust by being willing to accompany the poor. So the taxi driver took me there, and when I finally sat down and started talking with the priest, I asked him why he took such great risk to stand with the poor. And he said, it doesn't make sense to remember someone crucified 2,000 years ago if we are not willing to accompany those who are crucified today. The problem is that we in the middle class like to talk about the poor and hungry from a safe distance, where we can easily come to think we can fix their problems before we even understand their problems. And when we try to bridge the gap, we oftentimes do so on our own terms. So we love as a church to send volunteer teams to places like Guatemala to do something for the poor, to build them churches or clinics or other landmarks of what some people call the Great White Savior Industrial Complex. While at the same time, we gripe about having to pay a price for coffee that would allow those communities to build their own churches and their own schools. So let's be honest. We like mercy more than justice. The problem is that God prefers justice. Yet when people ask about justice in a hemisphere where free trade agreements allow mining companies from the north to pillage those mountains in Guatemala, or where climate change inflicts devastating losses on small coffee farmers there, driving some of them to migrate north in order for their families to survive, we start to get sleepy. Our eyes get heavy. Who wants to talk about such things? We'd rather talk about Donald Trump's tweets, which provide a compelling distraction to talking about the complicity that we share in an unjust international economic system. In fact, just that phrase, unjust international economic system, is enough to make me sleepy, and I'm the one who said it. Staying awake is not just a matter of hearing, it's also a matter of seeing. And we know from neuroimagery studies that have been done at Duke and Princeton that we have literally been schooled not to see poverty. They put people in this big machine that watches what goes on inside the brain, and then they show them photographs. And they'll show you a photograph of a person that looks like you, someone from your class and so forth. And the synapses, the machine shows that the synapses fire in a particular part of the brain. It's the part of the brain that recognizes people. And then they'll show you a picture of a rock or a chair, and the synapses fire in another part of the brain that recognizes objects. And then they show people inside these machines looking at what's going on in their brain, a picture of a homeless person at the stoplight. And where do the synapses fire? They fire in the object recognition part of the brain. We have literally objectified the poor, taken away from them their humanity. And if we can't see the poor, we can't see Jesus. And he will be born into our midst one more time, and like people 2,000 years ago, we won't recognize him. But if we can do this religion thing right, church should become for us a place where we can reprogram our brains so that we can begin to see Jesus in our neighbor. And there's no better way to do that than through accompaniment, of intentionally seeking the company of those we have been schooled not to see. The word accompaniment comes from the Latin phrase ad companus, which could be translated as breaking bread together. It's hard to hate someone you break bread with. That's why a lot of folks who've grown up believing that it's okay to discriminate against LGBTQ folks, for example, change their perspective once they actually get to know somebody who's gay, once their child announces who's coming to dinner. In the same way, it is hard to ignore that person holding a sign at the stoplight if we've shared a cup of coffee with them. There's another story in the Gospels of how some rather depressed disciples discovered it was Jesus they had been talking to all along that road to Emmaus. But they didn't know it was him until they had shared a meal with him, until they had broken bread together. So being engaged in mission, whether here in Los Angeles or someplace on the other side of the world, means staying awake, listening, seeing, opening our lives to be blessed as we encounter Jesus at the edges of our community, as we break bread with the poor. But we should be clear that such accompaniment is neither easy, nor is it without cost. Are we willing to pay the price? When greed and hatred conspire to crush people in our day, are we willing to sacrifice the privileges that we enjoy in order to stand with them? Martin Niemöller wrestled with that question. He was a Lutheran pastor in Germany who ended up being imprisoned by the Nazis because of his resistance to the Third Reich. I've been to the room that he shared with other prisoners in Dachau, where he wrote the famous lament that he hadn't acted sooner. First they came for the socialists, Niemöller wrote, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. What Pastor Niemöller understood is that it did no good to worship God if we're not willing to stay awake and stand with God's children when they are threatened. In our day, as refugees and immigrants and the environment are under grave threat, we may not be able to fix hatred, but we can stand with whoever is threatened by hatred. And we do so because of our faith. Because of our belief in Jesus Christ as the Lord of our lives, we are called to declare in our time that when they come for the Muslims, that we are Muslims. When they come for the refugees, we are refugees. When they come for the Mexicans, que somos todos mexicanos. And when they come for our LGBTQ sisters and brothers, we are queer. And when they come for the planet, we are the trees and the rivers and the volcanoes. As the priest in San Salvador told me, it doesn't make sense to remember someone crucified 2,000 years ago if we don't accompany those who are crucified today. Who's being crucified in our time? And are we going to stay awake and stand with them?
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org. or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.